Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
With us, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in. It's always fun to have our listening audience join us. I'm learning that the music, I got to shut that off because it overpowers me and you guys don't hear me. I'm at the opener, so I apologize for that. Kill that music right away. I like that good opener. And we got some new openers starting here pretty soon. Special thank you to Andy Elvey for all that he does to help us on our openers and our intros and outros and the music in between. A lot of good stuff that he does for us. Special shout out to him. He's Alice's son and is a professional broadcaster, is a part of MortgageU Indicom as well. Also want to say we have on our broadcast today David Stevens and Austin Tillman. Now, this is not the David Stevens from the NBA. We have the David Stevens, the servicing expert, who works with Austin Tillman at United Capital Markets out of Denver. We're going to be talking about servicing. For those of you that received the email, you saw a misspelling on his name. It's not the V, it's the PH Stevens, like David Stevens in United Capital Markets prefers to say. He says, I spell my name right. David Stevens there at the NBA hasn't figured out how to spell it correctly. So anyway, we have a little fun head with jiving back and forth, and I always somehow seem to get the V in there when I'm typing it out on the website or a different place. So I apologize for the misspelling and any confusion that may have brought about. Special thank you goes out to United Guarantee. I want to call their attention today to their United Guarantee's Performance Premium. This is the mortgage insurance industry's only MI pricing that is truly risk-based, surpassing simple tiered-based systems and broadening the option for lenders and their customers. Performance Premium has the power to give you a wider credit box. For example, it allows you to deal with and work with more difficult borrowers. And then this is something I just learned, more non-traditional properties such as second homes. It also has a chance to reward stronger borrowers because they're going to obviously benefit from the risk-based pricing. And then also gives the opportunity to close more loans. Lenders can leverage UGI's very fast underwriting on a full file submissions and ability to do more. And the different types of loans that they're able to do is rather remarkable. So if you have not got a hold of one of their representatives, please do so. Also, a special shout out goes to Tony Rampe, who is the regional vice president of the Central Region. Tony walked up to me when I spoke last week at Thursday at the Dallas Mortgage Bankers Association luncheon. And introduced himself, handed me his card. It's so fun to meet all the folks there at United Guarantee as I travel around the country and speak at these conferences. So much fun, Troy, so good to have met you there in Dallas. And so if you have not gotten a hold of your local representative, get a hold of them. Folks like Troy Rampe are the ones that really can tell you in greater detail all there is about the Performance Premium side of it. Also, Velma stands for Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistance. We appreciate them being a part of our broadcast and what we do. They are an excellent solution for email marketing. If you're looking for a solution, I encourage you to check out their website, velma.com, V-E-L-M-A.com. Appreciate them and all of you listeners for tuning in. I'm looking at the website. We have people dialed in from all over. We got Paul Mollo just dialed in. Sam Garcia, we've got a great show today and a lot to cover. But let's kick it off with what's going on in the markets. Joe Farr, you and I are hosting the broadcast. Andy Schell and Alice Alvey are not going to be with us today. So it's you and I, bud.
It's going to be fun.
It'll be fun, yes. Always fun.
This morning, Dave, MBS prices are down just a little bit, down a couple 30 seconds. No news really moving that. A couple Fed speakers this morning, a Fed speaker this morning could have had some influence on it, but they've really been bouncing around at down 5 all the way up to break even, or same as where they ended the day Friday. No real direction one way or the other so far today. Dow's back is up again. You know, it ended today, Friday, on a record high. Well, it's up another 25 basis points. Not enough to say much about, but at a new record high.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So last week, Dave, was a pretty wild week, wasn't it?
Boy, it was. And, you know, you look at – we can't wait to talk about this week, but last week was just one of those ones where more volatility Monday and Tuesday was up, and then Wednesday was correct. I mean, but didn't we close out the week pretty close to where we began the week, or is it just slightly off?
Well, we ended the week lower, not by a whole lot, though. I mean, Monday and Tuesday, like you said, we lost close to a point in price on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
Got to get a good bit of that back on Thursday based on the ECB report. And then Friday, the jobs report looked like it was going to be a very favorable report, or at least the market was taking it favorably and pushed prices a little bit higher. But by the end of the day, it was down a bit on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So the big mover this week was, the first couple of days, somewhat there was anticipation of the ECB meeting and the jobs report on Thursday and Friday, and it had an impact, a negative impact on the market on Monday and Tuesday, but also on Monday the ISM report came out, or Tuesday, I don't remember which, and it came out stronger than expected, which as you might expect would be a little bit negative for mortgage rates, but really it was just anticipating the two big events on Thursday and Friday. When the ECB announcement came out, they did pretty much what people expected without the quantitative easing program. They did reduce the interbank lending rate from 25 to 15 basis points. They did begin charging interest on reserves held at the ECB. They're now charging 10 basis points to hold reserves there. And they did extend a loan program, a guarantee program, where the ECB guarantees or passes through interest rates at very low rates to banks for loans that they make to businesses. So this is all a plan to encourage lending to businesses, which will hopefully expand economic activity and raise inflation a bit. So they did all that. They didn't do the quantitative easing that some people thought they might try to announce. The infrastructure is really not there yet for them to do that anyway. So they did announce that they're going to begin working on the things that would build the infrastructure that would allow them to do some asset purchases.
Right.
So that was on Thursday. Then on Friday, the jobs report came out. And as somebody stated, it was as close to expected as they'd ever remembered seeing. I mean, it was in all aspects, really. The number of jobs created was very close to consensus. The hours worked, the wage inflation was all very close to consensus. The unemployment rate, which people have sort of discounted lately, was expected to go up a tenth, but it didn't. It remained unchanged. So the initial reaction, like I said, on Friday was favorable for mortgage rates, but by the day was over, all that had reversed, and prices were down just a bit. And so that brings us to this week. We start
Jolts.
Off tomorrow with the Jolts report. That's your favorite report now, you and Janet.
Yes.
And it's expected to slow a slight improvement. Then really the big event for the week is going to be May retail sales. It comes out on Thursday, and expecting very strong gains in retail sales, especially following what was announced last week from the Automobile Association, identifying one of the highest number of cars sold in the month of May, going back to pre-recession. So a very big month in auto sales. The unemployment rate, in addition to retail sales, we have PPI coming out on Friday.
PPI.
And then the Treasury auctions, 3-year, 10-year, and 30-year starting on Tuesday. So it'll be a pretty busy week. Just won't be the blockbuster events like we had last week.
So is there, of all the events that you see stacking up in front of us, which is fairly light calendar for overall, Jolts, I would imagine, but retail sales, it sounds like, is what you have starred on your website as the real areas to be paying most attention that could be the biggest market movers.
Right. And then the inflation numbers. They're historically the big market moving event, but they have been so tame and expected to stay fairly tame. Most likely will not indicate anything to be concerned about. So the big event is going to be retail sales.
Yeah, the retail sales. It looks like the economists are projecting it to be a nice improvement from a 0.1% from the prior reporting period to 0.7% positive. So that's an upswing.
That's a big gain.
And then from,
that's a big gain.
That is a big gain. So we'll see. I mean, do you think that's slightly optimistic? Any thoughts on that?
I got to go with the guys that set the consensus. They certainly know this stuff better than I do.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, it's been interesting. It's been interesting how much has been missed, and then but like the jobs report last week, that was they nailed that one. So
sure
interesting
did.
To see. Fascinating, folks. If you are not watching the markets, first of all, how can you be in this business not watching the markets? Number one, number two, if you are, but you're relying on one of those wordy services that are out there just pumping your heads full of information that really is not necessary, consider MBS Quote Line. It is probably one of the best systems for giving you concise, to the point, on the money information on what's going on in a dynamic way. To learn more, stay tuned, listen to this message, and we'll be right back after this brief note.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility over the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We have with us also Paul Mallow, who is with www.imfnews.com. If you haven't subscribed to this valuable website, shame on you. We talk enough about it. Subscribe. Paul's there. Brandon Ivy's there. We've got Thomas Wrestler's there. Just good. A whole lot of great information. Charles Wesnowski. Am I saying that right, Paul?
Let's not even go there.
I don't even try that. I'm going to slaughter that. Sometime I'll tell you my story about when we introduced a team from Czechoslovakia who were wrestling at our school, and I had to introduce all their names. I've never seen so many consonants in one name in my life. I slaughtered it, and I swore I'd never do that again. But anyway, it's good to have you on the broadcast, Paul. Happy June 9th to you.
Yeah, same to you. What do we got today? Well, we got done crunching the jumbo numbers for the first quarter, and I guess the good news is jumbo production was down 21.4% and compared to overall production, which was down 23%, maybe that's not so awful. But, you know, it's funny. We've been hearing anecdotally that the jumbo business is doing, you know, okay. You know, it's not resulting in much securitizations because a lot of the banks are making these loans or keeping them in portfolio, or they're buying them through trading desks or from correspondents, and they're keeping them in portfolio. In fact, I'm not sure when we're going to see another jumbo MBS. We'll probably see one in the next month or so. But
so Redwood, are you saying Redwood is selling those out on a trading desk out to the banks?
Yeah, from what we understand, yeah, they're not securitizing them, and they don't have much of a balance sheet. So they just trade them, and they, you know, they like anyone else. They get a whole loan price for it, and they make a profit on their sale. They have to do something.
Yeah.
If they can't securitize it, I mean, you know.
Well, they could securitize that they're probably getting a better execution, it sounds like, on the whole loan trade. Interesting.
Yeah, that's been the story of the jumbo market for the last year or so. You know, it's a very strange situation, and I'm not sure when it's going to end. But, I mean, everyone tells me it will end when banks find better assets to put on their books and, you know, and it's more economical or better execution to securitize, but it's not. We're not there yet. And you keep wondering, when is that day coming when banks will find something else to buy besides home mortgages? And, you know, and there's not a lot of them because we all know we're in a tough origination market. We're looking at a trillion,
yeah,
maybe 1.2 trillion this year at best. So, you know, it's very, very strange times. The other odd thing that happened, we broke it on Friday, PIMCO filed,
yeah,
with the SEC. They have 10.6% of PHH Corp, which was, you know, I thought sometimes these filings get done and you realize, well, they already owned a stake and they're just increasing it a little bit. But I checked and this, it looks like they, looks like it's true. They own 10.6% of PHH Corp. It looks like it's a value play. We'll see what happens. They've been trying to sell the mortgage company, PHH Mortgage, since the beginning of the year. So far, no deal. There's lots of talk they're going to keep the mortgage company now. They sold their fleet business or agreed to sell it last week. Interesting. Interesting story.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Ressler is out at the ABA compliance conference in the Big Easy. He's going to be probably filing a couple reports online tomorrow. One thing he pointed
out
today,
there's
a lot of chatter. Yeah, a lot of chatter in the hallway. Compliance officers, you know, you should know this, David, that these guys are in demand. If you want a good living, I guess, become a mortgage compliance officer because everyone is afraid of compliance. They want to make sure they're in compliance, and salaries for these guys are pretty good. So that's on the website as well. There was a delinquency problem with one of the Redwood Trust MBS.
I know, that caught
the,
my attention.
But it was strange. It was, Fitch pointed it out. It had nothing to do with the loans going bad. Something happened with some of the servicing getting transferred, and I guess payments weren't received in time. Brandon Ivey's got that story. It's on the website. We'll be doing a little more for the weekly on that one. The other thing that came up early this morning, a lot of people in the industry know Rick Thompson. He's what we call an industry,
yep,
vet who's been out there for a long time.
Oh, wow.
He stepped down about 2 weeks ago. There was no reason why. We had it on the IMF News website. He's still a part owner in the company, and they finally named a successor, basically Pat Walden, stepping up. He's already there, but he's going to take on the CEO title. No one knows really what's Rick's doing. He's going to keep a stake in the company and pursue other interests, I'm told. And that's another strange situation, I guess, but maybe not.
Yeah.
And then we got short takes where we mentioned FBR reduced their production estimate is now at $989 billion for,
really?
2014. Yeah, and that's got to be one of the lowest out there. That's not, you know, they're not feeling too bullish, but you never know. You never know. Shall we say, a watershed year for the industry.
What's your short takes on too many applications are newbies?
Apparently NAR did some research. There's a lot of new applications, and according to what they're hearing anecdotally from lenders, there's a lot of people applying for purchase money loans who've never bought a house before. I guess these are your missing first-time home buyers. And they think that part of the reason that maybe the origination numbers aren't so robust is that it just takes longer to process these things and hold the hands of mortgage customers and walk them through the process. I mean, there's so much talk, as you've heard as well. You know, everyone knew refis were going to fall. Well, how come the purchase business hasn't really picked up this year? And the thing we keep hearing time and time again is first-time home buyers aren't ready, they don't have the money, and they've never been through the process. And the other biggie, of course, is inventory. There's, in hot markets like D.C. here, and I think I've heard about the Houston market as well, there's just not enough affordable homes to buy, and that's, you know, slowing things down. There hasn't been enough building. You know, ask anyone in the San Francisco Bay Area how many homes are for sale, you know, in so-called affordable ranges of 400,000 or 500,000, and you know, you got to go over to Oakland. You know, it's just the inventory is not there.
Inventory, yeah, and it's a legitimate issue. It's a legitimate issue, but I find it difficult to think that newbies are the applications are processed. I used to do first-time home buyers. We were well-equipped to be able to move them through and hold their hand, do whatever amount of babysitting we had to. So it's interesting to see the studies that are out there and some of the reasons attributed to why we're not seeing more first-time homebuyer market. There was an interesting Fannie Mae did a study on millennials, Paul. And was it you that told me about that, or did I find that when I was doing today's Mortgage Minute, that other thing I do, the daily video? And I noticed they studied 1,000 millennials. Half the group were those that bought homes, and they were measuring whether or not they were satisfied with their decision. The other half had not yet bought a home, and they wanted to find out if, you know, were they still wishing they had gotten into the market, were wanting to still get in the market. What was interesting, those that owned homes, the percentage had gone up that they were satisfied with their decision. What is interesting even more is while the majority of those that had not bought a home still wanted to buy a home, but the percentage had dropped from 62 to 59 or something like that. I'm recalling those statistics off the top of my head. Interesting about what's going on with millennials. Sorry, so that came out of nowhere.
I hope it's not catchy over the phone line.
Yeah, so sorry. Yeah,
the millennials, I was joking quite a bit on our website last week about the study by Truly on the millennials.
Yes,
and they it was comical. It basically said, Mom and Dad, can I have money for a mortgage? 10 things millennials won't give up to amass a mortgage down payment. And top of the list is, you know, number two is their smartphone. it seems to, you know, beat up on this generation of not wanting to sacrifice to buy a house and, you know, enjoying going out to eat and vacations and smartphones and, you know, well, I don't know. It's
really interesting when you start studying the millennials and seeing what you know, I'm looking at every study I get my hand on. So if any of our listeners out there have a study, pay attention to it, bring it, forward it over to me. I'd be and to Paul. It's very, very fascinating because I think that's going to be a big determining factor as we look forward to the economy as it grows or hopefully grows. Paul, thanks so much for being with us. And anything else that you have that you want to call our attention to? I think you did a good job covering it.
No, I think that's it for this week. You know,
hey, Dave.
Everything else is on
the
website.
Joe's got something
for you. Well, we
got
Paul. Allison ain't going to be with us, and so I just wanted to bring up this whole thing about the G-fee and Watt's request for comments on the G-fee increase. Wanted to see what Paul's thoughts were on that.
Good.
Well, we've been hearing about it for months, and I think the industry is so happy that he even asked because – when DeMarco was in there, it's basically, you know, he'd have some private meetings with lenders and you know, people from NAR and the home builders probably, and, you know, basically, you know, he would say, here's the G-fee increase, live with it. The fact that he's asking the industry's opinion shows that, you know, the FHFA under him is definitely a kinder and gentler place to be. And, you know, I think he's genuinely concerned about first-time home buyers and people not qualifying. And I think he looks at the loan level price adjustments and wonders, you know, what, you know, how they can reduce some of those to help people qualify. I mean, some of these charges can be quite extensive when you start heaping on these extra fees for this and that. Don't meet this credit box. You have to pay extra. I mean, it's really a form of risk-based pricing. So I think the industry is really, really happy that he even asked. You know, I've been hearing he's not going to hike G fees, and he might come down on the LLPAs. But you know, also we heard that some of the top guys in Fannie and Freddie were saying, you know, we want higher G fees, and you know, maybe they're starting to look at their profit pictures and realizing, with all their legal settlements ending soon, that you know, I think they'll continue to make money. Maybe they won't make that much, and they're looking to boost their bottom line. So it's going to be an interesting 6 months for the industry to see what happens, how all these things play out. But
well,
again, I think the bottom line is the industry's really happy to have this chance to comment, and it may even be unprecedented.
He's asking questions like, are the G fees at a fair level? Are the G fees high enough to spur private securitizations?
Right.
And so I think his focus is really different.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at, we were talking about jumbo rates and conforming rates earlier, and when you look at is the G fee right. You don't have to look far from that to see you know, jumbo rates without G fees are lower than conforming rates with G fees. So it's seems like a pretty fair rate.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting on the millennial front. Belinda Foster just shot an email over, and she's going to be attaching. Hopefully, it wasn't attached, but Harry S. Dent has got some interesting studies on the millennials, and I've been following Harry S. Dent for years on his economics. Sometimes you don't like to read him because they're just so dang depressing. You look at how he's not optimistic about the housing future here just a little bit, so we'll have to see. But Belinda, thank you for sending that over. Paul, good to have you on the broadcast. As
thank you.
Always appreciate you joining in. Say hi to our friends there at the IMF News, Inside Mortgage Finance. Thank you, Paul. Have a great week.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe. Bye-bye.
You bet. Joe, thanks for jumping in on that. It's always good to kind of get some of the commentary that he has there because he does have a unique insights in it. He's hitting the phones hard all the time. I want to go over to Sam Garcia. Sam is with us, and Sam is, of course, part of Mortgage Daily. We try to get a couple perspectives on what's going on out there. So Alice, again, is not with us on the broadcast. She had a meeting that came up at the last minute, apologized, and so we miss having Alice on. But let's get an update from Sam. Sam, good to have you on the broadcast.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
You know, one good positive piece of news is that both Radian and MGIC reported that their May activity was higher than any other month this year. So a little bit of an uptick there. We put out our mortgage employment index today. We tracked basically a net loss of 8,100 jobs in the first quarter. California took the biggest hit. And among companies, Bank of America had the biggest decline, though J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo also took a hit. But one thing that we were able to come up with was an estimate of total industry employment. Now, you know, the Labor Department reported Friday that there was about 279,000 people working in the business
right. In
non-bank jobs. So what we got there is, people who are in the mortgage business but don't work for the banks, which do a good share. And, in fact, I got some information last week from the FDIC and did some calculations and came up with roughly about a 66% market share for banks. And so,
really?
And when we throw that in and use and then come up with a new employment number, that puts mortgage employment, including banks, at roughly about 810,000 people across the country.
Wow. So the fact that we've had 300,000 people downloading this unique downloads of this broadcast is encouraging, and we are capturing a pretty good share of the market. That's good.
Yeah,
so 800,000 people. Well, it's trying to get out and connect with as many people and make him aware of the issues. And thank you so much. That's 810,000 is the number of people. Someone was asking me that, and I'm preparing for a speech next week in Indiana, speaking at the Indiana Mortgage Bankers Association's annual conference. And so it's good to have that. So 279,000 people in the non-bank space. Is that number correct?
That's right.
And then the balance is then is the rest. Interesting. What else? You track so much statistics. Again, one of the reasons I'm a fan of what you publish. Again, you got great news sources in that. But one of the reasons I'm such a fan is the statistics that you have. What are some of the other things that you want our listeners to be aware of, Sam?
You know, we did a report last week on credit union performance. And it's really interesting that at this point we've got about 6,500 credit unions out there that are reporting. Down, and in fact has been down every year since 2004 when there was over 9,000 credit unions. But, you know, even though they're dropping and they've been consistently falling the number, we're seeing that their first mortgages have been growing and, in fact, have expanded every year since 2004. So we got basically bigger credit unions, fewer of them, but they're doing more mortgage business.
Interesting. Yeah, we've got a number of credit unions contacting us, and we have more. I don't know if it's not a massive number, but we have more credit unions contacting us for advice on how to run their mortgage operation than I've ever had.
That's great. That's great. One interesting story is like to get some of this crazy stuff that you read about. There was a bank out there that had failed a couple years ago, and this what wound up happening, this was in 2012, I think it was. And what wound up happening is it turns out a director at the bank had been embezzling money. He basically embezzled about $21 million from the bank that they handed over to him to invest. And what wound up happening was about a month before the bank failed, he disappeared and he sent suicide notes to some of his friends, giving the impression he was going to kill himself. He turns up in December in Georgia. He'd been hiding out, and now he's finally pled guilty. So that was just kind of an interesting story. Montgomery Bank and Trust was the name of the bank and was in Georgia.
Interesting. Well, there are certainly some strange individuals that get attracted to our business. Thankfully, we're purging most of them out. But, Sam, thank you so much for giving us an update on what's going on in the markets. And I look forward to having you on next week, giving us a little perspective.
Thanks, again,
David. People can find out about it by going to your website. Why don't you tell everybody where to go?
It's at www.mortgagedaily.com, and you can browse the headlines without a subscription.
Yep, it's great. Amount of information, just the headlines are worth it, but really when you dive into it, the reason the value of the subscription is probably one of the most valuable, deepest resources for actual research data that's available to you for the most affordable price in the market that I can find. Really good stuff. Thanks, you, Sam. Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, David.
Right. You bet. We had a Profit Doctor is also on the road. He's out and about, so we miss having him along with us. So he says to send his greetings, and I'll be meeting with him a little bit later on the day. But we're going to get on in just a minute with Austin Tillman and David Stevens. And if you ever spell his name, it's P-H. Make sure you get that in there, David Stevens and Austin Tillman of United Capital Markets based out of Denver. We're going to be talking about servicing. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
It's good to have you with us, everybody. A couple things I forgot to mention in the earlier segment is check out Easy Mortgage Apps. We are now, Lickin' on Lending broadcast is now featured in this mobile app. And if you download this mobile app, you are able to listen with just a touch of a button, any of the broadcasts. So it's very exciting. They've done their launch, and I just was getting some emails from Michael Keller just before the broadcast starts. So I want to give them a real shout-out. Check it out, www.easymortgageapps.com. Appreciate them sending out the word about our broadcast and featuring it on their app. Lots of valuable services there. Also, shout-out goes to Mark Dameron up there in the Denver area. Mark says, Dave, he emailed me or texted me on Sunday, said I downloaded and just got caught up in all my listing of all my broadcasts. It was really fun. A lot of content here. So we appreciate the positive feedback. Of course, we heard from Belinda Foster a little bit. Folks, we literally have listeners all over the country. We got over 334,796 downloads of this broadcast. And it's just amazing to me. And part of it is because we have really good guests such as we have on the radio right now. I'm pleased to introduce to you Austin Tillman, President and Executive of United Capital Markets, Inc., located there in Denver, along with his partner in services. I could say partner in crime. We can't do this. Nothing criminal about what they do. It's a little blessing. David Stevens, spelled P-H, Chief Operating Officer, Chief Financial Officer. Both of them come with just extensive background in mortgage servicing. Austin is, Austin, you've been in the business since the 80s or 70s or 80s. I know David's been in the business since 1969 and was there at the Dallas-based company. I can see it. the old servicer, the big one.
Lomas.
Lomas, thank you. Gosh, it's been so long. Yeah, it's a long, long time ago. But anyway, it's good to have both of you here.
Long gone Lomas, yeah.
Yeah, long gone Lomas. That was quite a deal. I'll never forget the annual conference that year when they were the sponsor and they held this massive party. It was like a tombstone, literally, for their future, because that's the year their business ended, and it happened over market movement, and it had to do with servicing. The thing you guys specialize in is advising people how to preserve the value of servicing, their servicing portfolios, through hedging. And I think it's just wonderful service. So you watched what could happen. So let's get started here, guys, with the interview, but I want to say welcome to the broadcast. It's always so good to have you both on. Appreciate you both.
David, it's great to be on the program.
Always a pleasure, and Austin and I share a love for flying together. He's a pilot that is just, I mean, we get into talking flying, and it just goes nuts. But we're here to talk about what went on at the secondary and talk about servicing, so let's start there. David and Austin, we both attended, all of us attended the MBA Secondary Conference there in New York last month, and I'd like to get from your perspective, how was the conference, and what did you notice, find most interesting about the conference?
Well, David, again, thank you for having us on again. This is always a pleasure. But it was a great conference
for those that
for
don't
us
recognize, this is the voice of Austin Tillman. So we'll introduce the voices so everyone discerns that when they haven't met you. So this is Austin. Okay, Austin. So go on.
I think that Dave Stevens, my Dave Stevens, is got a touch of bronchitis. So I think you'll definitely hear that in his voice. But it was a great conference for us and for our business. It's clear that more players are focusing on hedging their MSR investments, and more players are owning MSRs. So for a secondary marketing conference, there really was a tremendous amount of discussion about servicing and the implication to our customers.
It's good to have you on the broadcast as well, and you and I share some hacking, so we'll hack away together on this. Give us an example of what you're talking about that you saw at the conference, some of the things there.
Well, everybody's talking about the impact of Basel III on the servicing market. You know, where is it going to go? We're actually starting to see servicing sales that we can directly linked to Basel III, and for that to be talked about at a secondary conference is really unusual.
The 10% restriction on MSRs as a percentage of the core capital doesn't fully go into effect until 2019. So, you know, with that in mind, why are people seeing transactions starting to sell so early?
We think it's because prices are good now.
Okay. It's a price-driven
futures thing. Unpredictable. Yeah, I mean, so why wouldn't you go ahead and harvest some of the gains while there are plenty of players in the market and they're paying good prices?
Yeah,
this is Joe. I'd kind of heard that prices had softened since I know they got pretty high in 2013. Is that true? And is that having an impact?
Joe, I'll tell you that it's clear that the prices have softened, but, you know, there were a number of deals in 2013 that were priced through the levels that any buyer would have a hard time justifying. You know, if you reverse engineered the deals, you'd see yields under 8%. Now yields are back in the 8 to 10% range, and I think that was healthy.
So why do you think that happened? Because rates are still historically low.
Well, there was a tremendous amount of money that was raised to invest in MSRs, and there was a lot of pressure on those buyers to get their funds invested. There were hedge funds and private equity companies that again, raised, you know, $500 million at a crack to own the asset. But we think now there's more equilibrium. The buyer's under less pressure to do deals, but they still want the asset.
So Austin, who are you seeing sell the most? Who's providing the supply out there?
Well, you know, it's community and regional banks, part of it anticipating Basel III, and then their non-bank mortgage companies seeking to realize gains on their servicing portfolios. You know, they started owning servicing back in 2011, and I think we were on the program advocating that back then. But there's tremendous earnings pressure today, and we talked prior to the show that the earnings pressures today did not exist last year. Volumes have plummeted along with gain on sale margins, and it used to be you'd made 4 points, and now you make one.
Yeah. So, there for a while, there were lots of servicers that were keeping their servicing and holding on to it, and so you're seeing them start to sell. Is that going to be true for most of the smaller guys, or is that a thing of the past?
Well, I think that again, there's a significant reason for a mortgage company to own servicing as a buffer to interest rates and. Potentially the next raise or next direction of interest rates, could be higher. Who knows when that's going to be? You're going to want to have that kind of an asset on your balance sheet so you survive.
Yeah. So the non-bank buyers or aggregators, this servicing, how big a role are they playing in the market?
We think they're going to play a really large role. Just a few years ago, we were talking to producer-only companies about owning servicing as a hedge against a bear market production cycle to get better execution in the secondary market also. Many actually did that, and they're thinking of servicing as a permanent part of their long-term strategy.
Well, so were these the small guys, the mom-and-pop mortgage companies?
Not really. We've been surprised and pleased to discover a growing group of non-bank producer servicers with net worth in like the $20 million to $100 million range or more in a couple of instances. Mom and pops are participating, but the larger holdings are with these new groups.
Let's talk about Basel III, because that's been a big fly in the ointment for the bigger guys. Is that a done deal?
Well, maybe so, but the MBA really hasn't given up, nor has the the ABA and some of the other banking groups. Actually, the MBA is drafting a letter to regulators, and in that letter they'll ask for raising the 10% limit, excluding commercial MSR because it really doesn't have prepayment risk,
right,
and bringing the risk weighting down from 250% down to 100%. It's many things with the MBA. They have lots of constituencies that benefit from Basel III, and another group that could be hurt by Basel III.
Yeah, no question. They have some divided loyalties there. So it'll be interesting how the others, David Stevens, misspells his name with a V in there, how he handles it. Let's get back to the GSEs for a minute. Do the GSEs really care about this whole topic?
That's interesting. Just a few years ago, they were talking about too much MSR being aggregated with just a few bank-owned servicers. But now that the disaggregation has picked up steam, they seem worried about who those new players are. They got the behavior they rewarded, so now we'll see how they deal with it.
I want to keep focused on some of the hot topics there at the secondary conference that you guys, that really piqued your interest. What were some of the other hot topics there that you found yourself really listening in on or catching your attention?
Well, there were several. I mean, a couple of related topics were the ultimate plans for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the potential for a private securities market and the common securities platform, the single securities platform. So there were a tremendous number of topics to talk about.
Austin, did you hear anything more about the potential legislation to shrink or eliminate Fannie and Freddie and to spur new securitizations, and that has a big impact on the servicing that's out there now and the servicing that might come in the future.
The Johnson-Crapo legislation, which I'm not current. It appears to have died, but it gave us reason for optimism. The failure to gain momentum points to political pressure to keep the status quo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But why is that?
Without getting into details, Fannie and Freddie have become cash cows for the Treasury. They don't seem to be adequately reserved. Their CEO was out talking about their need for reserves, and yet they're regularly making dividends to the Treasury from, quote, profit. We think that's a big factor for Congress and Treasury to keep the status quo.
I would love to get your perspective on, you know, it would seem like we've got to get it out from it, conservatorship. I mean, it just seems like the most sane thing to do. But can it change with the administration? Different forces seem to be working against this. There's a lot of talk, but after everything's said and done, more said than ever done.
You know, we're a long way from the Potomac, but I think that's true of on a lot of topics.
Anything that goes outside the Beltway, it's true.
Yeah. You know, we think that there are a few in Congress that will keep bringing up this topic as it really should. You know, frankly, from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's perspective, there are substantial private investors that are buying their stock and continue to push for change, but it's really hard to tell if their bets are going to be for or against the status quo.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look at this.
Well, can we go back to that G-fee question that we talked with Paul about earlier?
You
I'd love to
that
get your guys'
topic.
Thought. Yeah. It's an interesting situation given that it may not be necessary other than to bring private capital back into the market. So, would love to hear your guys' thoughts on the G-fees and whether or not they're where they need to be, or will they continue to move higher, and will that attract private capital?
Well, it seems to be one of the strategies is simply raise G-fees and let private capital back in. But there's lots and lots of impediments related to the sins leading up to the mortgage meltdown. Investors don't trust the ratings agencies. They don't trust the trustees, the document custodians, the servicers and issuers. The mortgage securitization transaction needs to become way more transparent, and some things need to happen to shore up the trust in the whole system. So long as the explicit government guarantee is out there, it's going to be hard or require a relatively large yield enhancement to attract investors away from Fannie and Freddie.
And would any of the legislation like Johnson Crapo do anything about that?
Joe, it's certainly on the right track in our view. If everyone's paying the same government-backed part of the mortgage insurance, then the level playing field will be established. It would only take a short while to develop the tools allowing for really robust analysis of the pools, the mortgage pools, remove the dependence on the SEC preferred ratings agencies. And the investors would need more assurance than in the past that trustees, custodians, and services will work in their interest.
So how far away do you think we are, really, from a private
great
securitization?
Question.
In the conforming market, not the jumbo market.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's hard to guess. I mean, it's hard to imagine 3 years, but, you know, it could be five. We really need clarification on what the agency's future is first, and then something similar to Johnson Crapo to get those things off of the sandbar.
You know, I'd like to get back to servicing, and we got so many bank clients out there that I know are listeners of the broadcast. We got a lot of non-bank clients, but are there still advantages to banks versus non-banks to accumulate and hold MSRs?
Yes, the availability of cash and the ability to utilize cash from escrow deposits are still huge issues benefiting the banks.
But can't non-banks borrow some of the cash?
Unfortunately, traditional bank financing of MSRs is still very limited. Some larger entities are stripping out a portion of the MSR, calling it an interest-only strip, even though it's not been validated by the GSE, and then putting that cash flow into an REIT or some similar enterprise. that's a costly and complicated finance.
Yeah, it
only
is.
Available to a few. Yeah.
Very true.
So what's the industry need to do to get their hands on more bank financing for MSRs?
We think there's some lenders out there that really want to get into this market, but they're turned off by the GSE's right to confiscate servicing if there's an operational or financial servicing failure. Lenders want a stronger acknowledgement letter from the GSEs so that they can protect their security interest if they take reasonable measures to cure the servicer's acts of default.
Yeah, isn't that like a trip to the past? Wasn't it like that at one time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the acknowledgement agreement was never very strong. But in the 80s and 90s, it was relatively routine to transfer servicing from a failing institution to a healthy institution. Frankly, in 2008, there were huge transfers as part of FDIC deals. But the waters really got muddied around Taylor, Bean, and Whitaker, that failed to massive fraud and involved, frankly, a lead MSR syndicate. But no one came out of that hole in that liquidation. And MSR lenders finally did make partial recoveries from the proceeds of the MSR sales. But really, that Taylor, Bean, and Whitaker event really, stopped the syndicates from providing that kind of financing.
Yeah, that was a big boulder dropped in this whole area. But can't that easily be fixed?
Well, it seems so, but it's hard politically because of the varied interests of FHFA, the FDIC, and other regulators.
So let me ask, what's happening in the servicer retained market right now?
Hey, Kesha.
It's kind of in a holding pattern, particularly for non-banks. Many experienced production downturns that eroded margins and the cash available to invest in MSRs. In some cases, it was bad enough that MSR owners sold to generate cash and or realize profits. We think that's likely to continue through the rest of this year.
Is that just all non-bank servicers?
No. A few are actually gaining market share and increasing production. So they have the capital and cash to continue accumulating MSRs. So there's been a rise in a very strongly capitalized group of non-bank producer servicers, but there's another group that got into servicing and didn't have near the capital of some of these bigger guys.
Where do you see these types of companies headed in the long term?
I think really there are two likely directions. Some are private and plan to stay private forever. And then, there are a handful of private investors. There's another group that look toward IPOs maybe, 1 to 5 years down the road. So, again, I think that there are really two likely directions.
Where do you see the bank servicers will be headed over the long term?
Speaking about community banks and regional banks, we think they'll all function easily within Basel III, wherever it lands and when it lands. Those with production capacity that far outstrips their ability to retain servicing under Basel will enter arrangements to subservice for others that will own the MSR off their balance sheet.
You guys spoke here at the TMBA conference, the Texas Mortgage Bankers Conference down in San Antonio, and you were a real hit. A lot of people called me and said, Lincoln, that was one of the best presentations about the value of servicing. And so the overriding question, who should be retaining and who would you advise to not be retaining? A lot of people are saying, maybe I should be considering this, but do I fall in the bucket? I mean, who should be, honestly? And include everyone, banks, non-banks.
Well, I mean, you're talking to huge fans of servicing. Not only do we hedge
it's not just because you're a fan, though, Austin. It's for darn good reason. You look at the economics in these things. That's what you were bringing out at the conference.
Yeah, I mean, it's just from a top level down, it's an asset that can yield 9 to 10% pre-tax, tax deferred, and, you know, frankly, for banks, the asset is self-funded. So there are very few businesses that a bank can be in that have those kind of economics. And from a private investor's perspective, number one, it's an offset to a bear market, which we've already talked about, but it's a pretty good yield. So, you know, you do have political risk, HARP and HAMP and eminent domain and, you know, what's going to happen with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the CFPB.
But aren't we past a lot of that? Those risks aren't, I mean, really, those risks are not as significant as they were, I would assume, unless we have another.
No, I would agree with you.
Unless you listen to Harry S. Denton and you listen to another housing crisis, I can't imagine that we're going to be going there.
You know, again, the new servicers generally are subservicing, and they're putting the asset on the balance sheet at reasonable levels. But the question is, you know, can I afford for a private company? Can I afford the cash? So we started talking about the ability to finance, and there are some people out there. It's just starting, but for those private companies. There are a number of facilities available that to offset some of that cash need.
Austin, those that are considering – go ahead. Was that David jumping in there, Nat, or Joe?
No, that was Joe. I wanted to ask about, you know, the market for buyers of servicing in the future. You know, you hear a lot about the involvement of both the CFPB, the FHFA, and even – the Attorney General in New York stepping into deals that would have been done, without much discussion in the years past. Do you see that as a risk also, that there will become hurdles that you have to overcome that make it much more difficult and maybe impossible to do small portfolios of servicing? And I don't know how you define small, but not,
well,
you know, that. The big ones are really getting a lot of scrutiny, and the small ones maybe are okay, but do you see it becoming more and more difficult?
Well, I think Auckland in New York is kind of a special case. Even though Auckland was highly rated by Fannie Mae as a servicer, there were some failings related to a New York bank that Auckland owned. There were also some servicing issues, but the GSEs, as I understand it, were ready to approve that transfer and may have already approved it. So I think to look at that as an indicator of an overall market would be looking the wrong direction. We're seeing a lot of activity moving out of community banks, going into private hands or into different banks or regional banks. We've heard of a servicing sale that's directly related to Basel III that's in the range of $28 billion that will probably happen in the next few months, and we're hearing there's interest in that portfolio because it's a very clean portfolio coming from a good servicer. So we're seeing the whole market. Robust. Yeah.
It looks like we're so close out of time, and I want to make sure people that are considering servicing or discussing this or giving a contemplation really know how to get a hold of you. So, gentlemen, let's make sure we get our contact information out there to everybody. So, Austin, it's Austin at UMC, UM. UCM. Inc. Yeah, UCM. God, you know, the dyslexic thing could have been disaster. So then what's the best ways for phone numbers and everything, gentlemen? So,
phone number is 303-268-8402. 303-268-8402 is my direct. And it is Austin at UCM-Inc.com.
Thank you so much. Of course, David Stevens, same thing. Dave at, same thing, UCM-Inc.com. So, Excellent. Appreciate you both so much taking time. It's so good to have you guys on the broadcast. Every time we do, we always have a large group of listeners, and there's a lot of interest here. Get a hold of these two folks if you're interested in considering servicing or hedging servicing. They're the industry best. I guarantee you, you will not be disappointed in your conversation. Great to have them here. Folks, good to have you with us. Next week, we've got Casey Cunningham coming on, talking to us about how to recruit loan officers. Got some a lot of good content. Stay tuned. And be back with us next week. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.